Chapter 8. The kings of Eloria gathered in Bokdor for the funeral of King Rodar and the subsequent coronation of his son Kiva. Such a gathering, of course, was traditional. Though the nations of the north had diverged somewhat over the centuries, the Elorns nonetheless had never forgotten their origins in the single kingdom of King Kerak Bareshoulders. 5,000 years in the dim past, and they came together at such times in sadness to bury a brother. Because King Rodar had been beloved and respected by other nations as well, Anheg of Kerak, Kohag of Algeria, and Belgarion of Riva were joined by Fulrak of Sandaria, Coradulan of Arindia, and even by the erratic Drostalactun of Gorognadrak. In addition, General Varana was present as the representative of Emperor Ranbarun XXIII of Tolnedra, and Tzadi, chief eunuch of the palace of Queen Salmisra of Nyssa, was also in attendance. The burial of an Elorn king was a serious matter, and it involved a certain amount of ceremony at which only the other Elorn monarchs were present. No gathering of so many kings and high-ranking functionaries, however, could ever be entirely ceremonial. Inevitably, politics were of major concern in the quiet discussions which took place in the somberly draped corridors of the palace. Erend, soberly dressed and quiet, drifted from one small gathering to another in those days preceding the funeral. The kings all knew him, but they seemed for some reason to take little note of his presence, and so he heard many conversations, which might perhaps not have been heard had they stopped to consider the fact that he was no longer the little boy they had known during the campaign in Mishrak Achtul. The Elorn kings, Belgarion in his usual blue doublet and hose, and the brutish-looking Anheg in his rumpled blue robe and dented crown, along with quiet-voiced Kohag in silver and black, stood together in a sable-draped embrasure in one of the broad hallways of the palace. "Porin is going to have to serve as regent," Garion said. "Kiva is only 6, and somebody's going to have to run things until he's old enough to take charge himself."
"A woman?"
Anheg said, aghast.
"Anheg, are we going to have that argument again?"
Kohag asked mildly.
"I don't see any alternative, Anheg," Garion said in his most persuasive manner.
"King Drosta is almost drooling at the prospect of a boy king on the throne of Drasnia. His troops will be biting off chunks of the borderlands before the rest of us get home, unless we put someone in charge here."
"But Porin is so tiny," Anheg objected irrationally. "And so pretty. How can she possibly run a kingdom?" "Probably very well,"
Kohag replied, shifting his weight carefully on his crippled legs.
"Rhoda confided in her completely, and she was behind the scheme that eliminated Grodeg, after all."
"About the only other person in Drasnia competent enough to take charge here is the Margrave Kendan," Garion told the King of Kerak. "The one they call Javelin. Do you want the chief of Drasnian intelligence sitting behind the throne giving orders?"
Anheg shuddered. "That's a ghastly thought. What about Prince Skeldar?" Garion stared at him.
"You're not serious, Anheg," he said incredulously.
"Silk? As regent?" You might be right," Anheg conceded after a moment's thought. "He is just a little unreliable, isn't he?"
"A little?" Garion laughed.
"Are we agreed, then?" Kohag asked. "It has to be Porin, right?"
Anheg grumbled, but finally agreed. The Algar King turned to Garion.
"You'll probably have to issue a proclamation."
"Me? I don't have any authority in Drasnia."
"You are the overlord of the waste," Kohag reminded him.
just announce that you recognize Poran's regency and declare that anyone who argues about it or violates our borders will have to answer to you.
That should back Drosta off, Anheg chuckled grossly. He's almost more frightened of you than he is of Zakath. He probably has nightmares about your flaming sword sliding between his ribs.
In another corridor, Erend came upon General Varana and Tzedi, the eunuch. Tzedi wore the mottled iridescent silk robe of the Nasons, and the general was draped in a silver Tolnedron mantle with broad bands of gold-colored trim across his shoulders.
So, it is official, then, Tzedi said in his oddly contralto voice, eyeing the general's mantle.
What's that? Varana asked him.
The general was a blocky-looking man with iron-gray hair and slightly amused expressions.
We had heard rumors in Stithistor that Ranbarun had adopted you as his son.
Ah, expediency, Varana shrugged. The major families of the Empire were dismantling Tonedra in their scramble for the throne. Ranbarun had to take steps to quiet things down.
You will take the throne when he dies, though, won't you?
We should see, Varana replied evasively. Let us pray that His Majesty will live for many years yet.
Oh, of course, Tzedi murmured. The silver mantle of the Crown Prince does become you, however, my dear general.
He rubbed one long-fingered hand over his shaved scalp.
Thank you, Varana said with a slight bow. And how are affairs in Samisra's palace?
Tzedi laughed.
The same as they always are. We connive and plot and scheme against each other, and every scrap of food prepared in our kitchens is tainted with poison.
I had heard that this was the custom, Varana remarked. How does one survive in such a lethal atmosphere?
Nervously, Tzedi replied, making a sour face. We are all on a strict regimen. We routinely dose ourselves with every known antidote to every known poison. Some of the poisons are actually quite flavorful. The antidotes all taste foul, however.
It is the price of power, I suppose.
Truly. What was the reaction of the Grand Dukes of Tolnedra when the Emperor designated you as his heir?
Varana laughed.
You could hear the screams echoing from the wood of the Dryads to the Arendish border.
When the time comes, you may have to step on a few necks.
It is possible.
Of course, the legions are all loyal to you.
The legions are a great comfort to me.
I think I like you, General Varana, the shaved-headed Nason said. I am certain that you and I will be able to come to some mutually profitable accommodations.
I always like to be on good terms with my neighbors, Tzedi,
Varana agreed with aplomb. In another corridor, Erend found a strangely assorted group. King Tholrak of Sindaria, dressed in sober, businesslike brown, was speaking quietly with the purple-garbed King Coradulan of Arindia, and with the scabrous-looking Drosta Lactun, who wore a richly jeweled doublet of an unwholesome-looking yellow.
Have either of you heard anything about any decisions concerning a regency?
The emaciated Nedrak king asked in his shrill voice. Drosta's eyes bulged, seeming almost to start out of his pockmarked face,
and he fidgeted continuously.
"I would imagine that Queen Porin will guide the young king," Fulrak surmised.
"They surely would not put a woman in charge," Throsta scoffed. "I know Elons, and they all look at women as subhuman."
"Porin is not exactly like other women," the king of Sindaria noted. "She's extraordinarily gifted."
"How could a woman possibly defend the borders of so large a kingdom as Thrasnia?"
"Thy perception is awry, your majesty," Coradulan told the Nadrak, with uncharacteristic bluntness. "Inevitably, the other Elon kings will support her, and most particularly Belgarion of Riva will defend her. Methinks no monarch alive would be so foolhardy as to counter the wishes of the overlord of the West."
"Riva is a long way away," Drosta suggested, his eyes narrowing.
"Not so far, Drosta," Fulrak told him. "Belgarion has a very long arm." "What news hast thou heard from the south, your majesty?" Coradulan asked the king of the Nadrax. Drosta made an indelicate sound.
"Kalzakath is wading in Murgo blood," he said disgustedly. "He's pushed Urgot into the western mountains, and he is butchering every Murgo that he can lay his hands on. I keep hoping that someone will stick an arrow into him. But you can't depend on a Murgo to do anything right."
"Have you considered an alliance with King Gethel?" Fulrak wanted to know.
"With the Tulls? You're not serious, Fulrak. I would not saddle myself with the Tulls, even if it meant that I had to face the Malorians alone. Gethel is so afraid of Zakath that he wets himself at the mention of his name. After the Battle of Tolmado, Zakath told my Tullish cousin that the very next time Gethel displeased him, he was going to have Gethel crucified. If Kalzakath decides to come north, Gethel will probably hide himself under the nearest manure pile."
"Zakath is not over fond of thee either, I am told."
Drosta laughed, a shrill, somehow hysterically sounding laugh.
"He wants to grill me over a slow fire," he replied, "and possibly use my skin to make a pair of shoes."
"I'm amazed that your Angarax did not destroy each other aeons ago," Fulrak smiled.
"Torak told us not to. And he told his Grolems to gut anybody who disobeyed. We may not always have liked Torek, but we always did what he told us to do. Only an idiot did otherwise. A dead idiot, usually."
On the following day, Belgaroth the Sorcerer arrived from the east, and King Rodar of Drasnia was laid to rest. The small blonde Queen Porin, dressed in deepest black, stood beside young King Kiva during the ceremony. Prince Keldar stood directly behind the young king and his mother, and there was a strange, almost haunted look in his eyes. As Erend looked at him, he could see very plainly that the little spy had loved his uncle's tiny wife for years, but also that Porin, though she was fond of him, did not return that love. State funerals, like all state functions, are long. Both Queen Porin and her young son were very pale during the interminable proceedings, but at no time did either of them show any outward sign of grief. Immediately following the funeral, Kiva's coronation took place, and the newly crowned Drasnian king announced in a piping but firm voice that his mother would guide him through the difficult years ahead. At the conclusion of the ceremony, Belgarion, King of Riva, and Overlord of the West, arose and briefly addressed the assembled notables. He welcomed Kiva to the rather exclusive fraternity of reigning monarchs, complimenting him on the wisdom of the choice of the Queen Mother as regent, then advised one and all that he fully supported Queen Porin, and that anyone offering her the slightest impertinence would most surely regret it.
since he was leaning on the massive sword of Riva Irongrip as he made that declaration, everyone in the Drasnian throne room took him very seriously. A few days later, the visitors all departed. Spring had come to the plains of Algeria as Polgara, Dernek, Erend, and Belgrath rode southward in the company of King Kohag and Queen Silar.
"A sad journey,"
Kohag said to Belgrath as they rode.
"I am going to miss Rodar."
"I think we all will," Belgrath replied.
He looked ahead where a vast herd of cattle under the watchful eyes of a band of Algar clansmen were plodding slowly west toward the mountains of Sindaria and the great cattle fair at Muros.
"I'm a little surprised that Hedhar agreed to go back to Riva with Geryon at this time of year. He's usually at the head of the cattle herds."
"Adara persuaded him," Queen Silar told the old man. "She and Genedra wanted to spend some time together, and there's almost nothing that Hedhar won't do for his wife."
Polgara smiled. Poor Hedhar. With both Adara and Tenedra working on him, he didn't stand a chance. That is a pair of very determined young ladies.
The change of scenery will do him good, Kohag noted. He always gets restless in the summertime. And now that all the Murgos have retreated to the south, he cannot even amuse himself by hunting down their raiding parties.
When they reached southern Algeria, Kohag and Silar bade them farewell and turned eastward toward the stronghold. The rest of the ride south to the Vale was uneventful. Belgrath stayed at the cottage for a few days and then prepared to return to his tower. Almost as an afterthought, he invited Erend to accompany him. "We are a bit behind here, father," Polgara told him. "I need to get my garden in, and Dernek has a great deal of work ahead of him after this past winter."
"Well, then it's probably best if the boy is out from underfoot, isn't it?"
She gave him a long, steady look, then finally gave up. "Oh, very well, father."
"I knew you'd see it my way, Paul."
"Just don't keep him all summer."
"Of course not. I want to talk with the twins for a while and see if Belden has come back. I'll be off again in a month or so. I shall bring him home then."
And so Erend and Belgrath went on down into the heart of the Vale again and once more took up residence in the old man's tower. Belden had not yet returned from Meloria, but Belgrath had much to discuss with Beltira and Belkira. And so Erend and his chestnut stallion were left largely to find their own amusements. It was on a bright summer morning that they turned toward the western edge of the Vale to explore the foothills that mark the boundary of Ulgoland. They had ridden for several miles through those rolling, tree-clad hills and stopped in a broad, shallow ravine, where a tumbling brook babbled over mossy green stones. The morning sun was very warm, and the shade of the tall, fragrant pines was pleasant. As they sat, a she-wolf padded quietly from out of the bushes at the edge of the brook, stopped, and sat on her haunches to look at them. There was about the she-wolf a peculiar blue nimbus, a soft glow that seemed to emanate from her thick fur. The normal reaction of a horse to the presence or even the scent of a wolf would have been blind panic, but the stallion returned the blue wolf's gaze calmly, with not even so much as a hint of a tremor. The boy knew who the wolf was, but he was surprised to meet her here.
"Good morning," he said politely to her. "It is a pleasant day, isn't it?"
The wolf seemed to shimmer in the same way that Belden shimmered as he assumed the shape of the hawk. When the air around her cleared, there stood in the animal's place a tawny-haired woman with golden eyes and a faintly amused smile on her lips. Though her gown was plain brown, such as one might see on any peasant woman, she wore it in a regal manner which any queen in jeweled brocade might envy.
"Do you always greet wolves with such courtesy?" "I haven't met many wolves, but I was fairly certain who you were," Yes. I suppose you would have been at that.
Aaron slid down off of the horse's back.
Does he know where you are this morning?
Belgarath? Probably not. He's talking with Beltira and Belkira, so the horse and I just came out to look at someplace new.
It would be best, perhaps, if you didn't go too much farther into the Ogo Mountains. There are creatures in these hills that are quite savage.
He nodded.
I'll keep that in mind.
Will you do something for me?
She asked him quite directly.
If I can.
Speak to my daughter.
Of course.
Tell Polgara that there is a great evil in the world, and a great danger.
Zandramas?
Erend asked.
Zandramas is part of it, but the Sardian is at the center of the evil. It must be destroyed. Tell my husband and my daughter, warn Belgarion. His task is not yet finished.
I'll tell them,
Erend promised.
But couldn't you just as easily tell Polgara yourself?
The tawny-haired woman looked off down the shady ravine.
No,
she replied sadly.
It causes her too much pain when I appear to her.
Why is that?
It reminds her of all of the lost years. It brings back all of the anguish of a young girl who had to grow up without her mother to guide her. All of that comes back to her each time she sees me.
You never told her, then, of the sacrifice you were asked to make?
She looked at him penetratingly.
How is it that you know what even my husband and Polgara do not?
I'm not sure. I do, though, just as I know that you did not die.
And will you tell Polgara that?
Not if you'd rather I didn't.
She sighed then.
Some day, perhaps, but not yet. I think it is best if she and her father are not aware of it. My task still lies ahead of me, and it's a thing I can face best without any distractions.
Whatever you wish,
Aaron said politely.
We will meet again,
she told him.
Warn them about the Sardian. Tell them not to become so caught up in the search for Zandramas that they lose sight of that. It is from the Sardian that the evil stems. And be a trifle wary of Zaratus when next you meet her. She means you no ill, but she has her own tasks as well, and she will do what she must to complete it.
I will, Poledra,
he promised.
Oh,
she said almost as an afterthought.
There's someone waiting for you just up ahead there.
She gestured toward the long tongue of a rock-strewn ridge thrusting out into the grassy vale.
He can't see you yet, but he is waiting.
Then she smiled, shimmered back into the form of the blue-tinged wolf, and loped away without a backward glance. Curiously, Erend remounted and rode up out of the ravine and continued on southward, skirting the higher hills that rose toward the glistening white peaks of the land of the Ulgos as he rode toward the ridge. Then, as his eyes searched the rocky slope, he caught a momentary flicker of sunlight reflected from something shiny in the middle of a brushy outcrop halfway up the slope. Without hesitation, he rode in that direction. The man who sat among the thick bushes wore a peculiar shirt of mail, constructed of overlapping metal scales. He was short, but had powerful shoulders, and his eyes were veiled with a gauzy strip of cloth that was not so much a blindfold as it was a shield against the bright sunlight.
"Is that you, Erend?"
the veiled man asked in a harsh-sounding voice.
"Yes,"
Erend replied.
I haven't seen you in a long time, Relg.
I need to talk with you,
the harsh-voiced zealot said.
Can we get back out of the light?
Of course.
Aaron slid down off of the horse and followed the Ulgo through the rustling bushes to a cave mouth running back into the hillside. Relg stooped slightly under the overhanging rock and went inside.
I thought I recognized you,
he said as Erend joined him in the cool dimness within the cave.
But I could not be sure out there in all of that light.
He untied the cloth from across his eyes and peered at the boy.
You have grown,
Erend smiled.
It has been a few years. How is Tyba?
She has given me a son, Relg said,
almost in a kind of wonder.
A very special son.
I'm glad to hear that.
When I was younger and filled with the notion of my own sanctity, Ul spoke to me in my soul. He told me that the child who will be the new Gorm would come to Ulgo through me. In my pride, I thought that he meant that I was to seek out the child and reveal him. How could I know that what he meant was a much simpler thing? It is my son that he spoke of. The mark is on my son. My son!
There was an awed pride in the zealot's voice.
Ul's ways are not the ways of men.
How truly you speak.
And are you happy?
My life is filled, Relg said simply. But now I have another task. A raged Gorm has sent me to seek out Belgarath. It is urgent that he come with me to Prolgu.
He's not very far away,
Erend said. He looked at Relg and saw how, even in the dim cave, the zealot kept his eyes squinted, almost shut, to protect them from the light.
I have a horse. I can go and bring him back here in a few hours if you want. That way you won't have to go out into the sunlight.
Relg gave him a quick, grateful look and then nodded.
Tell him that he must come. Igor must speak with him.
I will,
Erend promised. Then he turned and left the cave.
What does he want?
Belgarath demanded irritably when Erend told him that Relg wanted to see him.
He wants you to go with him to Prolgu,
Erend replied.
The Gorm wants to see you. The old one.
The old one? Is there a new one?
Erend nodded.
Relg's son.
Belgarath stared at Erend for a moment, and then he suddenly began to laugh.
What's so funny?
It appears that Ul has a sense of humor, the old man chortled. I would not have suspected that of him.
I don't quite follow.
Oh, it's a very long story, Belgarath said, still laughing. I guess that if the Gorm wants to see me, we had better go.
You want me to go along?
Polgara would skin me alive if I left you here alone. Let's get started.
Erend led the old man back across the vale to the ridgeline in the foothills and the cave where Relg waited. It took a few minutes to explain to the young horse that he was supposed to go back to Belgarath's tower alone. Erend spoke with him at some length, and it finally appeared that the animal had grasped at least the edges of the idea. The trip through the dark galleries to Prolgu took several days. For most of the way, Erend felt that they were groping along blindly. But for Relg, whose eyes were virtually useless in the open daylight, these lightless passageways were home, and his sense of direction was unerring. And so it was that they came at last to the faintly lighted cavern with its shallow glass-clear lake and the island rising in the center, where the aged Gorm awaited them.
Yod-ho, Belgarath.
The saintly old man in his white robe called when they reached the shore of the subterranean lake.
Grosha Ul. Gorm,
Belgarath replied with a respectful bow.
Yod hom. Grosha Ul.
Then they crossed the marble causeway to join the Gorm. Belgarath and the old man clasped each other's arms warmly.
It has been a few years, hasn't it?
The sorcerer said.
How are you bearing up? I feel almost young, the Gorm smiled.
Now that Relg has found my successor, I can at last see the end of my task.
Found? Belgarath asked quizzically.
It amounts to the same thing.
The Gorum looked fondly at Relg.
We had our disagreements, didn't we, my son? But as it turned out, we were all working toward the same end.
It took me a little longer to realize it, Holy Gorum, Relg replied wryly. I am a bit more stubborn than most men. Sometimes I'm amazed that all did not lose patience with me. Please excuse me, but I must go to my wife and son. I have been many days away from them.
He turned then, and went quickly back across the causeway.
Belgarath grinned. Remarkably changed man.
His wife, she is a marvel, the Gorum agreed.
Are you sure that their child is the chosen one?
The Gorum nodded.
Bull has confirmed it. There were those who objected, since Tiber is a Marag rather than a daughter of Ulgo. But Ul's voice silenced them.
Yes, I'm sure it did. Ul's voice is very penetrating. So I've noticed. You wanted to see me?
The Gorum's expression became grave. He gestured toward his pyramid-shaped house.
Let's go inside. There's a matter of urgency that we need to discuss.
Erend followed along behind the two old men as they entered the house. The room inside was dimly lighted by a glowing crystal globe hanging on a chain from the ceiling, and there was a table with low stone benches. They sat at the table, and the old Gorum looked solemnly at Belgarath.
We are like the people who live above in the light of the sun, my friend. For them there is the sound of the wind in the trees, of rushing streams, and of the birds filling the air with song. Here in our caves, however, we hear only the sounds of the earth itself.
Belgarath nodded.
The earth and the rocks speak to the people of Ulko in peculiar ways. A sound can come to us from half around the world. Such a sound has been muttering in the rocks for some years now, growing louder and more distinct with each passing month.
A fault, perhaps? Some place where the stone bed of a continent is shifting?
I don't believe so, my friend, the Gorum disagreed. The sound we hear is not the shifting of the restless earth. It is a sound caused by the awakening of a single stone.
I'm not sure that I follow you, Belgarath said, frowning.
The stone we hear is alive, Belgarath.
The old sorcerer looked at his friend. There is only one living stone, Gorum.
I had always believed so myself. I have heard the sound of Aldor's orb as it moves about the world. And this new sound is also the sound of a living stone. It awakens, Belgarath, and it feels its power. It is evil, my friend. So evil that the earth herself groans under its weight.
How long has this sound been coming to you?
It began not long after the death of a cursed Tarak.
Belgarath pursed his lips. We've known that something has been moving around over in Meloria. We didn't know it was quite this serious, however. Can you tell me anything more about this stone?
Only its name. We hear it whispered through the caves and galleries and in the fissures of the earth. It is called Sardius.
Belgarath's head came up. Trag Sardius? The Sardian?
You have heard of it.
Belden ran across it in Meloria. It was connected with something called Zandramas. The Gorum gasped, and his face went deathly pale.
Belgarath,
he exclaimed in a shocked voice. What's the matter?
That is the most dreadful curse in our language.
Belgarath stared at him. I thought I knew most of the words in the Ulgo tongue. How is it that I have never heard that one before?
No one would have repeated it to you.
I didn't think Ulgos even knew how to curse. What does it mean, in general terms?
It means confusion, chaos, absolute negation. It is a horrible word.
Belgarath frowned. Why would an Ulgo curse word show up in Dar Shiva as the name of someone or something? And why in connection with the Sardian?
Is it possible that they're using the two words to mean the same thing?
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, Belgarath admitted. I suppose they could be. The sense seems to be similar.
Polgara had rather carefully instructed Erend that he must not interrupt when his elders were talking, but this seemed so important that he felt the rule needed to be broken.
They aren't the same, he told the two old men.
Belgarath gave him a strange look. The Sardian is a stone, isn't it?
Yes,
the Gorum replied.
Zandramas isn't a stone. It's a person.
How could you know that, my boy?
We've met,
Erend told him quietly.
Not exactly face to face, but... Well,
it was a difficult thing to explain.
It was kind of like a shadow, except that the person who was casting the shadow was someplace else.
A projection, Belgarath explained to the Gorum. It's a fairly simple trick that the Grolems are rather fond of.
He turned back to the boy.
Did this shadow say anything to you?
Erend nodded.
It said that it was going to kill me.
Belgarath drew in his breath sharply. Did you tell Polgara?
No. Should I?
Didn't you think it was fairly significant?
I thought it was just a threat. Meant to frighten me.
Or did it?
Frighten me? No, not really.
Aren't you being just a little blasé, Erend? Do people go around threatening to kill you so often that it bores you or something?
No, that was the only time. It was only a shadow, though, and a shadow can't really hurt you, can it?
Have you run across many more of these shadows?
Just Geradus.
And who is Geradus?
I'm not really sure. She talks the way Mandoralan does, these and thous and all of that, and she wears a blindfold over her eyes.
A seeress. And what did she tell you?
She said that we were going to meet again and that she sort of liked me.
Oh, I'm very sure that was comforting, Belgarath said dryly. Don't keep secrets like this, Erend. When something unusual happens, tell somebody.
I'm sorry,
Erend apologized.
I just thought that, well, you and Polgara and Durnik had other things on your minds, that's all.
We don't really mind being interrupted all that much, boy. Share these little adventures with us.
If you want me to.
Belgarath turned back to the Gorum. I think we are starting to get somewhere. Thanks to our reticent young friend here, we know that Zandramas, if you will pardon the word, is a person. A person that's somehow connected to this living stone that the Angaraks call Xragthardius. We've had warnings about Zandramas before, so I think we will have to assume that the Sardian is also a direct threat.
What must we do now, then?
I think we're all going to have to concentrate on finding out just exactly what's going on over there in Meloria, even if we have to take the place apart stone by stone.
Up until now, I was only curious. Now it looks as if I had better start taking this whole thing seriously. If the Sardian is a living stone, then it's like the orb, and I don't want something with that kind of power in the hands of the wrong person. And from everything I have been able to gather, this Zandramos is most definitely the wrong person.
He turned then to look at Erend, his expression puzzled.
What's your connection with all of this, boy? Why is it that everyone and everything involved in this whole thing stops to pay you a little visit?
I don't know, Belgorath,
Erend replied truthfully. Maybe that's the place we should start. I have been promising myself that I was going to have a long talk with you one of these days. Maybe it's time we did just that.
If you wish,
Erend said.
I don't know how much help I'll be, though.
Oh, well, that's what we're going to find out, Erend. That is what we are going to find out.